So today we'll look at case number 70 in the Book of Equanimity, titled Jinshan Asks About Being. It reads like this. Jinshan asks Suishan, "You know clearly that life is unborn. Why are you still attached to life?" Suishan said, "The bamboo shoot necessarily becomes a bamboo. I am still a shoot. You can't make a bamboo rope out of me." Jinshan said, "Later you will realize it for yourself." Suishan replied, "My view is just as I said. What is your view?" Jinshan said, "That is the hall. That is the kitchen." Suishan made a bow. So last retreat, the talks focused on the monk Fei Yen, as said founder of one of the five families or sects of Zen, from the 9th and 10th century of China. Some of you may remember, but for those of you who don't, Fei Yan and some fellow friends were on pilgrimage. A big storm came up and they took refuge in the temple of Dijong. At some point in the night, Dijong asked the traveling pilgrims where they were going. Fei Yan replied for them, "We're going on a pilgrimage." Dijong said, "Why do you go on pilgrimage?" Fei Yan replied, "I don't know." Dijong said, "Not knowing is most intimate." Later, when the storm abated, the pilgrims decided to continue on. Dijong accompanied them to the gate and asked, "I've heard you say several times over the day that the three realms are only mind, and the myriad dharmas are only consciousness." He then pointed to a rock lying on the ground by the gate and said, "So do you say that this rock is inside or outside of mind?" The pilgrims said nothing. And so Fei Yan stepped forward and said, "Inside." Dijong said, "That rock will become very heavy for you as you go on pilgrimage." Fei Yan was utterly taken aback by Dijong's words and decided to end his pilgrimage and take Dijong as his teacher. The other monks continued on. Two of these monks were Jinshan and Suishan, the two monks from today's case. Over time, both Jishan and Suishan came back to the temple and became head monks and over time, Dharma heirs of Dijong. Little is known about Jinshan, so let me tell you a short story regarding Suishan. During the pilgrimage, someone asked, "The ancients said that the single body is revealed in the 10,000 forms. Did they thus dispel the 10,000 forms or not?" Suishan said, "It is not dispelled." With that response, he was asked, "What do you say dispels or doesn't dispel them?" Sui Shan carried this question with him, but remained confused. At some point, he returned to Zizhang's temple, and Dizhang said on seeing him, "You have been gone. Why have you come back?" Sui Shan said, "I have an unresolved matter, and I am not willing to go traveling to mountains and rivers until it is resolved." Dizhang said, "It's not bad that you travel to difficult mountains and rivers." Sui Shan, however, didn't understand Dizhang's meaning, and he asked, "The single body is revealed in the 10,000 forms. What does that mean?" Dizhang answered with a question, "Do you say the ancients dispelled the 10,000 forms or not?" Sui Shan replied, "They don't dispel them." Dizhang simply said, "Two." For a time, Sui Shan mulled over this statement and finally said, "I don't know. I don't know whether the ancients dispelled the 10,000 forms or not." Dizhang said, "What is it you call the 10,000 forms?" Sui Shan had a realization. So I just wanted to say a couple things about this dialogue, and then we'll get back to case number 70 from the Book of Equanimity. Jin Shan asks about being. Dizhang said, "It is not bad that you travel to difficult mountains and rivers." For many of us, not only is it not bad to travel to difficult mountains and rivers, it is good. Actually, sometimes it is essential that we walk and stumble through dry riverbeds, climb or try to at least steep abrasive rocks and cliffs, and uninhabitable, hostile snow-swept mountains. Our path, this Zen path, may initially equip you with a map. Sit up tall and straight. Tuck your chins in a little. Fold your legs in a way that allows support, an anchor that you can maintain without moving for 25 minutes. Take one or two breaths all the way in, all the way out, and then breathe regularly, counting number one on the exhale, number two on the next exhale, and so on to number 10, where it's not important whether you reach that number 10. And then simply starting over again. Each time returning exactly, specifically, immediately to the number that you are on. That and a few other pointers are the map. But inevitably, the night will come with a thick, persistent fog. The stars and moonlight will fail, and you will get lost. The map will not be useless, but it may seem inadequate as you begin to stumble and trip and fall probably more than once. The terrain will be difficult. The sadness, the loneliness, the fear. And because you've never been here like this, it may feel like you went wrong, that you misunderstood, that you forgot something. But that isn't so. More often than not, it is not bad where you are in this moment. It is okay. In fact, essential. Just stay in the schedule. Stay with your one and only practice. Stay in your circumstance. The terrain will soften. The sun will rise. And the songbirds will sing again from closer than you ever imagined possible. Sui Shan was taken by a question. He inhabited it, or it inhabited him. And he didn't analyze the question. He didn't think about it. He embodied it, and he mused on it. He let go of. He abandoned the mind of pros and cons, of good and bad, of sacred and profane. And he mused. He mulled over. We aren't usually taught to do that in school. So, what is a way different than you were taught? What is a way different than you've been trained in? How else, in what other way can you hold or be held by a question, by a feeling, and by an image? Eiken Roshi would say to me, and I'm sure to others, as I was leaving the Dokusan room, muse on that. Muse. Dogen might have said, think non-thinking. Muse on it is Zazen with no subject, object, or activity. Think non-thinking is Zazen without before, after, or right now. And here might be another way to say it. Mule over that. Mull. Mull is a very old word, and depending on its use, one with many meanings. And here are a couple. When used as a verb, it can mean to turn over, to make supple through moistening, or to develop without active consideration. Often that later meaning, to develop without active consideration, was considered to be a negative. But in my Zazen, it is a positive. Mull, to develop without active consideration. To hold a koan, a phrase, an image. To hold a statement and develop it without active consideration by turning it over and under and around. Turn it about and bear witness to nature that is no nature. To mull is active inaction. It takes intention and attention to completely bear the witness, allowing each thing to be known as it actually is. If that isn't quite your way, here is mull again as a verb, but also a noun. Mulled wine, to mull wine. You do this by adding sugar and spices and heat to red wine or some type of non-alcoholic fruit cider. Here in the Zendo, your zazen is what is given. You then add the spices of an upright but relaxed body, with your eyes partially closed and your breath natural. Then add the herbs of birdsong, of wind blowing in varied clouds from the southeast. And add too the fragrance of incense and bodies, and then apply heat. Heat is the schedule. Heat is the schedule and your commitment to following it, which supports not only your practice, but the practice of your fellows walking this path of care and love. So please, muse on it. Please think non-thinking, or mull over that. So today's case is number 70 in the Book of Equanimity, titled Jinshan Asks About Being. And it goes like this. Jinshan asks Suishan, you know clearly that life is unborn. Why then are you still attached to life? Suishan said, the bamboo shoot necessarily becomes a bamboo. I am still a shoot. You can't make a bamboo rope out of me. Jinshan said, later you will realize it for yourself. Suishan said, my view is just as I said. What is your view? Jinshan said, that is the hall. That is the question kitchen. Suishan made a bow. So the dialogue begins with a pertinent question for all of us. If you know clearly, if you are clearly aware that it is life and life only, and that life is unborn, why do you still attach to it? If you realize life is unborn, what in actuality are you attaching to? What is the life you are attaching to? Why? This is quite a question, isn't it? It takes a fundamental examination to even begin creating or finding a response. What would you say? How would you respond, really? What is the life you are attaching to? Why? Many of us sitting here do not have God and heaven as an underpinning. We do not have devil and hell. So, what is your underlying foundation? The bedrock of your life, not life in general, but your specific personal bodied life. And why do you attach? Or maybe how? How are you attached? How about at 2 a.m., and you're wide-eyed with a thumping heart. You're wide awake with tingling toes and fingers and a sweaty brow. Even the person lying next to you, who wraps her arms around you, can't allay that anxiety, that trembling, that fear. Is life is unborn an antidote or an aphorism echoed in Buddha's conversation? Jinshan's question was initially asked eons before by Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. He asked it while attending a gathering in a village near Srivasti. He said, "Is there anyone who knows clearly that the nature of life is unborn and yet is held back by life?" A young woman stepped forward and responded, "There is," she said, "one who sees clearly, yet whose strength is not yet adequate or sufficient, is held back by life." So if you are mature in Zazen, but not yet in full expression, if you had had an insight or an experience, but it isn't yet fully integrated into your body mind, life will still have a hold on you. Life will still have a hold on you. Which I have to say isn't necessarily a bad thing. In fact, is a positive. It reminds me of Issa's haiku regarding the death of his young daughter. He wrote, "This dewdrop world is a dewdrop world, and yet, but that is a different point than the koan we're looking at." So Jinshan asked, "You know clearly that life is unborn. Why are you still attached to life?" And Suishan replied, "The bamboo shoot necessarily becomes a bamboo. I am still a shoot. You can't make a rope out of me. What do you make of this response? It is quite naked and honest. My practice, he is saying, is still young. My insight is still not fully mature. But in time, naturally, I will become a mature, strong, upright standing bamboo stalk. And then, as I strengthen, I can be made into a strong piece of rope, a tool to save others. Not now, but probably, certainly later. This, in its own way, has a truth to it. A strong, healthy, mature adult can function more broadly than a still growing child or adolescent. There truly is a past, a present, and a future. In Zen, we call that the practice point of view. There is a step-by-step karmic transition or progression. Sometimes we say, with a slight shift of perspective from what I just said, that on the character side of Zen, Shakyamuni Buddha has been practicing 2,500 years and still is only halfway there. And that is so. Zazen is like a drop of water landing on a rock. And over the years and years and years and years, it wears the rock down. It polishes the rock, smoothing it until there is nothing left but a gleaming mirror. And yet, that is one perspective and one only. And so Jinshan said, later, you will realize it for yourself. And I ask you, what will he realize for himself later? What would have to happen later for that to occur? Why not now? When is there other than now? If there's something other than right now, please show me. Sui Shan replied, as only he could, saying, my view is just as I said. What is your view? Jin Shan sat still a moment and then said, that is the hall. That is the kitchen. You know clearly that life is unborn. Why are you still attached to life? That is the hall. That is the kitchen. Is it this understanding, the unborn nature of life? If yes, how so? If not, why not?